girl, welcome to the Empower Her podcast, where we are all about taking purpose-driven action toward building lives we really freaking love. My name's Keisha, and I'm an entrepreneur obsessed with giving you actual tools to help take you from where you are now to where you want to go in your life, career, and relationships. And this podcast, it's all about real talk and having some fun as we share incredible stories, tips, and tricks to help us get out of our own way and unapologetically make some moves. So girlfriend, let's do the damn thing. Matthew, I am so excited to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Keisha. It's lovely to be here.
We are going to have such a juicy conversation that I know people that are listening in, they're driving to work, they're doing their workout, they're getting ready for the day. They're just going to nod their head aggressively and I think just like get some really good nuggets. So thank you for creating the books that you've created in the world, the new one coming out, and also just the content that you're continuously putting out into the world to really help people like have relationships that they're excited about and also believe that they're worthy of those relationships. So I want to start with that because, you know, we can talk about all of the ways that we can find our person and develop this life that we want, but it comes with the root of like self-confidence and self-worth, right? So like if we don't believe that we're capable of creating these relationships or that we're deserving of having them, then we're never going to create it, right? So how do you start when you're talking with people that feel like they lack the confidence or belief that they're able to create what they want? Where do you start?
Well, I even start a level before that where I say to people, you don't need confidence or self-worth to start pursuing something better. You just need to know at first that I can never again do what I've been doing so far. In other words, necessity is the mother of change when it comes to any area of our life, but it's our love life especially. If you've been in a relationship with someone who just never cared, with someone who showed no empathy, with someone who didn't show up for you or betrayed you or made your life chaos or was inconsistent, never made you feel safe, never truly respected you, that was likely so painful that it was impossible for you to experience any kind of peace or happiness while you were in it. And that's not just true of relationships. It's true of situations where we chase someone endlessly who doesn't want to be with us or who is seeing five other people and doesn't have any, you know, like never really turns to meet us in our feelings. When we're with someone like that, it's a special kind of hell.
Yeah.
And I say to people, first, understand that you can never do that again. Like this is just every single time I do this, it makes me so deeply unhappy that I just can't do it anymore. Right. When you realize that, it changes your actions because what you do is you define a new path going forward. You say, the only thing that's worth my time and energy is something that can bring me peace and happiness. And someone who doesn't want me or someone who's not choosing me, someone who's inconsistent, that has never produced happiness for me and it never will.
Yeah.
So let me decide on a new path of what I want and then make sure that no one gets onto my path who doesn't represent the things that I really need in order to be happy. Forget what you want. Forget that I want someone who's hot and, you know, has a certain way about them and has a certain level of charisma or charm or looks or whatever. Forget all of that.
Yeah.
None of that matters if my deeper needs can't get met. Not because I'm so confident and I feel like I can have whatever I want, but because I just know that the opposite is worse than me being on my own. So I'll take being on my own over ever going back to that stuff. We could talk about self-worth as well, but I just want to state for everyone out there, you don't need self-worth to say no to the wrong thing. You just need to know that the wrong thing has never worked in making you happy.
Yeah. So when we find ourselves like in that pattern where we're like dating the same person over, and honestly, outside of even love life, which I know we're going to like really dive into that, but like friendships, even like the same patterns over and over again, like the first like step, I guess, that you're saying is like acknowledging like, I'm not going to do this anymore without even the self-worth and self-confidence. But like, where do we go from there? Because I feel like it's like, okay, line in the sand. I'm not doing that now. What do I do now? Right?
Exactly. Well, by the way, just doing that can help you start to restore a little bit of worth, because you get the self-esteem rewards of doing things that are aligned, doing things that are good for you. I had a woman that I coached on my retreat who said, you know, I used to sleep with guys on the first date, especially if I was really attracted to them and I felt the chemistry. Often I would go home and sleep with them, and then the next day I would feel like crap. She said, it didn't make me feel good. Yeah. And she said, I made a rule for myself that, you know what, no matter how attracted to someone I am, I'm not going to go home with them on the first date. Not because I don't want to. I do want to. But I'm not going to do it because it's never made me feel good. And so she told a story. She stood up in front of my whole retreat and told a story of how a few weeks before she went on a date with a guy that she was incredibly attracted to. And she even said, like, he even felt kind of out of my league. And I had this feeling of like, oh God, I want to go home with him. And she said, I didn't. He tried to at the end of the night and I didn't. And then she said, it had this weird, subtle effect on my self-confidence that I had applied that agency and said no, where a previous me would have said yes and done the thing that made me feel bad afterwards. So that even just doing it can give us some self-confidence. But the next step is to say, what is it that's really important to me? Mm-hmm. And how do I start to create a different reality than the one that I have experienced so far in my life? Because we've all got into these belief systems about what's possible for us based on everything that's ever happened in our lives, based on the kinds of people we've attracted, based on the kinds of behaviors we've come to see as common in the world, based on the way we've been treated in the past. We have these reference points on which we hang our beliefs to say, this is the way the world is. And once we get to a point of thinking this is the way the world is, it can be quite a dangerous point, because we then keep recreating that world over and over again because it's the world we've come to expect. I'm a big believer in curiosity as an emotion. I think curiosity is this incredibly underrated value, because it's the thing that leads to newness. Believing, if you've been cheated on your whole life, or if you've been, you know, constantly attracting people who treat you poorly, or constantly with people who don't commit, you can start to develop a worldview that feels like that's the way the world is. And if someone comes along and tells you, just believe that people can treat you better, it's a very hard thing to do. It's like, based on what though? Whereas curiosity is much more easy, because you don't have to believe anything new to be curious. You just have to say, maybe the way I've experienced life my whole life isn't the only way of experiencing life. Maybe there are, I don't know what they are, that they're not real to me, but maybe there are other ways of going through life. Mm-hmm. And I think other people can be great reference points for that, because if you can find other people who are experiencing life differently to you, like I've for most of my life really struggled to trust people, not just in love, but in general. experiences in my life had made it hard for me to trust. Mm-hmm. And I remember having this visceral feeling anytime I thought of doing something for somebody that I was going to get taken advantage of by doing that. And so, and it held me back in a lot of ways in my life. The pain point for me, as it is for many people in their love life, was I started to recognize this is costing me. Like in my organization, I was like, I think this, the way that I am is actually hurting me because I'm not building relationships with people. And there are opportunities that I'm not getting because I'm very like this and, you know, I'm not like playing well with others, so to speak. And I realized like, oh, this, I actually think there's some way in which my engineering is actually hurting me. So I started looking for other people with different engineering, and I was lucky enough to have some friends around me who I'd made and had been very generous to me and had been very kind and supportive, which in itself was a kind of corrective experience. But on top of that, I saw how they were with other people, and I sensed that the way they were with people was different from the way I was with people. And I also, by the way, liked the results they were getting in their life. I looked at them and I was like, they're like living a life that I really think is wonderful. And it doesn't seem to be sinking their ship that they're different from me and that they're trusting more. So I started to ask them questions. I started to say, Keisha, behave like a toddler learning to walk. And I'd ask them very dumb questions that to them must have sounded like some of the most obvious things in the world. But I'd be like, so can you just help me understand? Like when you are doing that thing for that person, what's going through your mind? And they would like, tell me, well, I just want to, you know, I just think it's really nice to support that person. And, you know, it feels like a good thing to do. And I'd be like, but what if they take advantage of you? What if they take more than they give, and that makes you, does that not make you resentful? And they'd be like, well, you know, it can get to me. Yeah. And if I see that there's a pattern of that in the relationship where this person isn't a giver, then I start to apply energy in another direction. And I say, but don't you then hold on to that? And they'd be like, so I'm mirroring all of the things that I would be, I'm saying all of the things that would be happening for me. And they're like, well, actually, no, because I just kind of treat it like a kind of, it's almost like it's a giving tax. It's like some people end up taking more, but they can't do it to me forever because I won't allow that. So, you know, the people that I get in my life are the people that give back. And those are the people that stay in my life. And by the way, I never would have found those people if I hadn't been a giver in the first place. So the people that are the best people in my life, the only way I've got them is by being that person.
Yeah.
And the people that take advantage, they're people that I don't keep in my life anyway. So it's worth it to me to be this way and to not like hold back because I'm worried that I might in the micro get taken advantage of. And so what I would see by asking these questions is that there's places where we get to a fork in the road. They get to the same fork in the road as I do, but where I go left, they go right.
Yeah.
And when I asked those questions, I started to realize, oh, they have a completely different way of thinking about this, and it's leading to a completely different life for them than the one that I'm attracting. And then when I started to say to myself, okay, so this has given me a model for how to approach things differently, I would start to, in small ways, I would start to implement that model in my life. I'd be curious, well, okay, what happens if I do this? What happens if I, you know, or I'm a little more vulnerable? What happens if I'm a little more trusting? What happens if I see the best in someone? And when stuff started changing as a result of me doing that, it became curiosity leads to new reference points, and new reference points start to change the trajectory of your beliefs. So the curiosity, I believe, is a gateway drug to new beliefs.
So good.
Before you're capable of believing them. So yeah. When you ask me, like practically speaking, what does someone do in their love life? I would start with the humility, first, ultimate compassion for yourself. The reason that I'm here and that I believe what I do is because of the life that I've lived. And it's led me to this place where I have these challenges, for many people, these traumas, and it's made it hard for me. Mm-hmm. But so I'm going to have compassion for how I got here. But I'm also going to stand back from it and have the humility of saying, this isn't the world, it's my world.
Yeah.
And then from there, I'm going to say, if this is only my world, then let me apply curiosity to other worlds that may exist, even if I don't fully believe in them for myself yet. Mm-hmm. And then let me find other people who are living those and ask lots of dumb questions and recognize that I am a toddler learning to walk in an area where other people might be athletes who don't even know that this is hard for some people.
Yeah.
And start putting one foot in front of the other in really tiny ways that lead to new results that begin to mess with my old belief system about what's possible in my love life. I hope that's not too abstract of an answer, Keisha.
It's helpful. It's really helpful because I think like the curiosity lens is so playful and light versus feeling like it's this overwhelming idea of like, I need to do all of these things. But it also requires you taking the finger that so often we want to point at other people and say, this person's to blame, and flip it back around, point it at ourselves and say, what can I own here? And that can feel like all sorts of feels internally, right? When you are taking that radical responsibility. So the example that you just gave where you recognize that essentially if you're the problem in terms of you wanting to create these close relationships and trust people. And then you're deciding, okay, well, if I'm the problem, I'm also the solution. How can I get curious? What did that actually feel like when you identified that you were the problem from like how it felt in your body? Because I think a lot of us like to say like, oh, this guy is the problem, right? Like, oh, I dated this guy and like, he's the problem. And I dated the same person. They're the problem again. Oh my gosh, I just keep dating all these guys and they're all the problem. Not wanting to say, what could I do about this, right? But in like supportive way, right?
Let me add some nuance to that because I think it's really important. Firstly, yeah. There's a difference between blame and accountability. Mm-hmm. Blame is often very, I think blame is unhelpful because the truth is, if you had parents that abandoned you, if you had inconsistent love growing up, if you had people who constantly made you doubt yourself or your reality, if you were taught your needs don't matter, mm-hmm. if you were taught that volatility and chaos was love, and you find yourself being attracted to people who bring chaos into your life today or are inconsistent with their love or abandon you, you are not to blame for that. Mm-hmm. You grew up under conditions that in order to survive, you adapted to those conditions. And the adaptations that you had to undergo and the wiring that your nervous system did at a time where you weren't even choosing your wiring, it was just getting wired up based on your circumstances, is no longer serving you in this new paradigm, in this new stage of your life. You are not to blame for that. That is unfortunately, you are a victim of circumstance in that situation. And I know we live in a world today where we hate the word victim and I don't like, but it's kind of in that sense, you are a victim of those circumstances. It's not a 9-year-old in a volatile house isn't an empowered individual in that situation. Yeah. They're a victim of circumstance. They didn't choose their parents. They didn't choose the house they were growing up in. And unfortunately, as adults, we're still carrying that stuff with us. So to me, blame doesn't make sense. We need compassion, not blame. But you can have compassion mm-hmm. and accountability, meaning I can choose to own this. All of the things I've been through, all of the things that have led me here, I can take ownership for making my life better. And by the way, what the desire to make our life better and self-compassion go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Because the more I have compassion for what I've been through in my life and where it comes from, the less I blame myself and shame myself for feeling those things and experiencing those things. And the more I say, oh, God, I've not had an easy go of it, have I? Yeah. I owe it to this human being to try to make their life better. How might I make their life better? You know, and when you start asking that question, how might I make my life better? How might I give myself a better experience of this life? That leads to more interesting conclusions. The other thing I'll say is that it's not that we're also not crazy for the danger we feel if we get, let's say we're anxiously attached and we feel danger when someone doesn't text us back. Well, the danger you feel might not be real right now in this situation, but it was real at some stage in your life.
True.
And so you deserve love. That was real. What you're feeling, people can say, oh, she's crazy. He's crazy. I didn't text them back for 3 days and then they did this. You're not crazy. What you're experiencing is real. It's just not real in relation to what's happening right now. It's real in relation to what was happening in a different time in your life, and your body still feels it as real. That deserves love, not judgment, not shame. But and what's hard about life is that sometimes what we're feeling is also sometimes what we're feeling is not real in relation to what's going on. And sometimes it is. Sometimes we have a feeling about someone and both things are true. It's both true that we have previous trauma around this thing and it's made us hypersensitive and hypervigilant and looking for it everywhere. And it's also true that this is a dangerous person in our lives who we're right to feel unsafe with. And that's what trips a lot of people up, is that they get reinforcement and validation for their hypervigilance and for their fears because someone in their midst actually does present as real danger and their hypervigilance is picking up on it.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I love the distinction you just made about blame, because when I think about it as like an empowering thing where like you're pointing the finger back at yourself, it implies that you can do something to change your circumstances regardless of how you were raised or how you're reacting. But what you just pointed out of like, it's, you know, the texting someone back, right? Or like they're not responding to you, of like what's going on in your body, like in your nervous system. How do you help people determine like the root cause of that, right? Because if there is this repeated pattern over and over again where you're like, I do want to change because I have compassion for myself, that I want to be a person that loves herself and wants to be in a healthy, thriving relationship, whatever that looks like, whenever that is. It's more so like, how do we identify when that pattern's coming up and what to actually do about it?
So I think that you have to go far enough with your bravery in trying something a little new that you give yourself the possibility of, well, either learning more about this person and who they are, because right now our trauma and the things we've been through is creating a story about who this person is. Mm-hmm. And if we can go far enough to have a real conversation with that person, or to, you know, go just one step further with our communication or even our vulnerability, we will either confirm or invalidate the story in our mind. And that in itself is a positive step for a lot of people, is to go one step further than I normally do in confirming or invalidating the story I have about this person or this situation. But I also think that what doing that allows us to do is to potentially have a corrective experience. And corrective experiences is where so much of our healing is. To give an example, I was coaching someone who was texting. She was actually dating a guy who she said was actually pretty great. They, nothing had gone wrong. He hadn't done anything bad. But one day he had a gathering with his friends and he didn't invite her. And it brought up everything for her. Her abandonment wound, her this feeling of I like him more than he likes me. Yeah. He's embarrassed of me, doesn't want to introduce me to his friends. Like it created a whole bunch of stories in her head, which I'm not saying you're crazy for having those stories. What I'm saying is we don't know if any of these stories are even true.
Yeah.
Right now they're just stories. So, but they were stories that she jumped to because the reason we can suspect them to some extent is because she didn't jump to, you know, these are like friends that he's been trying to gather with for a while. And he's just decided to have a gathering with them and these people. Maybe it was just all boys. Maybe it was, she didn't jump to any of those possible stories. She jumped to a very specific lens for this particular situation. And that lens was determined by her past. So during the day when he was with his friends, she tried and tried and tried to just ignore him because her go-to was avoidance when she felt under threat. Mm-hmm. And then eventually in the middle of this gathering, she sent a text saying, "Why didn't you invite me?" And he sent a message back saying, "Oh my, you know, it wasn't like a, you know, there was no big reason behind it other than I just haven't seen these friends in a while. And, you know, I had meant to just get this little group of people together." And he said, "Can I call you tonight?" And she sent a message back that said, "Don't bother." And he then, for days afterwards, didn't reach back out to her. And then at that point, she was on the phone to me saying, "What do I do? You know, I just, it's like, I feel like it's happening again where I like this guy and I'm being abandoned." And the truth is she had been a participant in creating the conditions for that abandonment because the moment she felt threatened, which for her felt like a big threat because it was like, oh, I've let myself fall for this guy.
Yeah.
And now the other shoe is about to drop and I'm about to get hurt. Mm-hmm. The walls went up. And it's not just that the walls went up, the spear came out and pushed that person away. So she created the very thing that she was most afraid of experiencing, but she did it on her terms. I'm going to reject you before you can reject me.
Yeah.
So in that moment, you could say, well, how could she know? Like what, you know, was it really her stuff that was coming up? Or maybe it was true. Maybe he wasn't serious about her and he didn't want her there because he didn't want to integrate her with his life because he wasn't planning on having her in his life in a month.
Yeah.
We just don't know. So curiosity would say, okay, I don't know what his intentions are or what this means. What I do know is that in my past, I have pushed a lot of people away because I am afraid of getting hurt. And that often means that I'm not vulnerable. It means I become avoidant. And it means that I just withdraw before anyone has a chance to really hurt me. Okay. Yeah. If I know that, then curiosity can help me do something different.
So good.
So what do I do that's even 1% different to what I would normally do in this situation? Okay, well, normally I'd send a message saying, "Don't bother." But instead, maybe when he says, "Can I call you later?" you say, I'm going to say, "That would be really great. It would be nice to talk."
Or Matthew, you type "don't bother" and then you go backspace, and then you change it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, like get it out of your system first.
Text it to a girlfriend first.
Yeah. And, but maybe I say, you know, okay, that would be nice. And then you get on the phone to him and maybe it's too much for you to like be amazing energy on that call, because that's just like not authentic to what you're feeling. But maybe a 1% shift is you getting on that call and saying, oh, to be honest with you, I've had a little bit of a day today. And he says, why? And you say, look, rightly or wrongly, maybe you just wanted to hang with that group of friends, and, you know, I'm just not seeing clearly, but it hurt me that you didn't invite me. Yeah. And I don't know if I have a right to be hurt. Maybe I don't, but it kind of hurt me that you didn't invite me. And that gives him a chance to show who he is.
Yep.
Right. If he's like, oh my God, you know, the truth is blah, 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 and whatever. And you say, I totally understand that. Look, honestly, it's not, stuff like this sometimes affects me. You know, it has in the past, and I'm working on it, but it's, you know, it kind of caught me off guard today, and it made me, you know, I know myself, and it made me withdraw a little bit, and I don't want to withdraw because I like you, but it made me want to withdraw a little bit, because I know myself, anytime I'm like scared of getting hurt, my natural response is to withdraw, but I'm trying not to do that right now because, you know, I don't want to just be reactive. Now, if you said all of that, that might be a 40% shift, but it's, even if you did 1/10 of what I just said, it still offers the opportunity for something different to happen. Mm-hmm. And you will probably get a response that you've never had before, because you don't normally talk like that. And you get a different energy or a different level of honesty from someone, or a different level of vulnerability from somebody else. Of course, if you find that you did that and that person really had no time or energy for you saying any of that, then okay, like that's also information, because you're like, I want a relationship where and this goes back to defining your path.
Yeah.
I want a relationship where I can be a more authentic version of myself, albeit the best authentic version of myself, right? The version of myself that says, don't bother, is not my best authentic version of myself. Mm-hmm. This one where I remain open to possibility is my best authentic version. I'm not being something other than I am. I'm being real about who I am, but I'm also doing it with open arms.
Yeah.
That version of me is the me that I want to be accepted. If you tell yourself now, me on my best authentic day is the version of me that I want someone to see and accept, which is a bit different to the whole, you know, like that Marilyn Monroe quote, like, if you can't accept me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best.
Yeah.
Which incidentally, I'm not even sure she even said, but it's like a quote that flies around Instagram.
Right.
I always found that quote a bit troubling, because it, you know, us at our worst, if that's abusive, or if that's someone that just continuously shuts people out, or if me at my worst freezes you out and gives you the silent treatment for a week before I let you back in again, is the me that I'm asking you to accept. I'm being a little unreasonable here. So I think that we want someone to accept our authentic selves, but how we present our authentic self matters.
Yeah.
And if she can do that, If we tell ourselves that's what I want, and that's my path, is the relationship I want for my life is the one where I'm accepted as my best authentic self, then if he then doesn't respond well to that vulnerability from her, she actually should be at peace.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, what I did was create the opportunity very bravely for this relationship to prove itself to be more than I'd given it credit for.
Yeah.
And instead it revealed itself to be less than that. Yeah. And that means I can actually feel at peace knowing it wasn't the right thing for me, instead of saying, don't bother, which actually gives me no peace, because while it feels like it's protecting me, it doesn't give the relationship a chance to be what it could be.
Right.
Or to show itself to be more than my previous beliefs would think it could be. And in doing so, I kind of lose a form of closure because I feel like I didn't give it the chance. Instead, I just shut it down and I'll never know.
But what's cool about that too, that framework, is this can apply to an existing relationship that's been going for a long time, right? Like even thinking about this curiosity lens and like wanting to have this open conversation and trying things. Like if you're wanting to have a different result and you're doing the same thing over and over again and you're not getting that result, or you're not feeling like you get to express yourself, like for anyone listening into this that has been in a long relationship, I've been with my now husband for 15 years since we were 19 years old. And it's like, there are times that I've like repeated the same pattern over and over again, but it's like, if I don't like the result, then I can be curious about, let me try it this way and see what the result is from that. And I think it's just so beautiful the way that you articulate this in such a compassionate way, and why I'm also really excited about your book coming out, because there's one part of the tagline. So it's called Love Life, How to Raise Your Standards, Find Your Person. And this last part I love, and live happily no matter what. So why is that the tagline of this book, and who is this book for? And like, because that little like live happily no matter what, I'm like, ooh, that's a little zinger. I like that. So why that book? Yeah.
In many ways, I know that many people will get this book because they want to find love. And I created it as a co-pilot for anyone who wants to find love and anyone mm-hmm. who wants to do love better. But that final tagline of live happily no matter what was in many ways the most important promise of this book. Mm. Because I know in my life, my ability to, in the book I call it happy enough as opposed to happy, because I think happy enough is a more modest goal and happy can usually be very intimidating.
Yeah.
But my ability to be happy enough in the darkest times of my life has saved me.
Yeah.
It has saved me from descending into such a place of darkness and hopelessness and despair that, you know, life would become untenable. It saved me from a life of misery. And I think that that is as important as finding love, because by the way, even if we're lucky enough to find love, we can still lose it and nothing is forever and everything changes. And so I want to have the tools to be happy enough in any season of my life.
Yeah.
There was a woman that came to me who I have a group called Club 320, which is a very tiny group of people that I work with every year in a more immersive way. And it's about 50 people at this point. And there's a woman in that group who came to me and said, now bear in mind, she could have asked me anything. She could have said to me, Matt, how do I find love in the next 12 months.
Yeah.
But she didn't say that. She said, how do I kill my desire to find love?
Whoa.
She said, it has not happened for me so far in my life. The desire to find love makes me so unhappy. Every year that goes by that I don't find it, I feel so sad. And if I never find it and I have this desire for it, I'm going to be sad for the rest of my life.
Oh.
So she said, can you help me kill the desire to find love? Now, I wrote this book not just for the person who's hopeful and optimistic about finding love. I wrote it for her. I wrote it for the person who is being made miserable by the chronic pain of loneliness, the chronic pain of fear and anxiety that it's never going to happen for them, that they're too broken, or that too much life has passed, or that they've missed their moment in the sun. Mm-hmm. And that they'll never be happy because they'll never find love. For me, if you understand that you can actually, there are tools that you can use to be happy enough, even in those conditions, and that when you get to happy enough, in strange ways, your power starts to come back and the possibilities start to change. You rediscover the ability to create magic in your life and with other people from that state, which is something you can't do when you're in desperate pain. When you realize that, you realize happy enough is actually a superpower. And so I want this book to not only be something that restores optimism to people's love lives with a fresh approach to finding love that teaches them the past does not have to equal the future in this area of their life. I also want them to have read this book and to suddenly feel a sense of peace and ease that I am actually okay, that I do not need to panic, that I have all the resources and all of the tools I need to be happy enough right now as my life is today, because life is too short not to enjoy it today, even if there's something that you're working towards or there's a result that you might like in your future. Life is too short. Living is happening right now. And that's why for me, happy enough is an essential ingredient to this book. And I can't wait for people to discover those tools, because I've used them in my own life in some of the darkest times in my life. I didn't come across these tools from an academic place. I came across them from a hard-earned place of, I won't go into it now. People can read about it in the book, but I developed significant chronic physical pain in my life, in my ear and my head, that went on for years. And I truly got to the point where I thought my life was over and I was never going to experience joy again. I really believed this. I saw a therapist and said to him, I'm just going to live for everyone else now. Because I'm never going to be happy for us. I said a version of what that woman said to me: if I never get rid of this pain, I'm never going to be happy again. And my life is essentially over. And yet I don't know how to get rid of this pain. So where does that leave me? Yeah. And my conclusion at the time was, well, it just leaves me showing up for everybody else because there's no point. My life kind of doesn't matter anymore. I'm just going to show up to try and help other people be happy from now on. And it was the darkest, lowest statement of my life. The tools that I used to get through that are the same tools that I believe anyone can use who is looking for love but hasn't found it to be happy enough today before they've found it. And like I said, being happy enough also happens to be an amazing catalyst for finding it. The battle can be won before you ever find love. Winning that battle will paradoxically help you find love. So this isn't me saying learn to be happy on your own first. This is a much more sober, I understand how hard it is to be happy when there's something that you feel is essential to your being, like love, and you don't have it, or you want a family and you don't know what to do about the fact that you haven't got a person yet. You know, that I wrote a whole chapter in this book called The Question of Having a Child, specifically to those women who are struggling with the fear and the anxiety and in many cases the panic of having a life dream unrealized. Ugh. and trying to understand how to find their happy enough in spite of that. And so I think that people at every stage of life, from the person just starting their journey to finding love to the woman who is in her 60s and divorced, who wants another shot at love, to the person who is 37 to 42 saying, my window for having a child is closing and I still haven't found love. What do I do? I wrote this book for every person in every stage of their life. And I think people are going to find that this book is different from anything else they've read out there on these subjects.
You, like, your depth, and like, you're such a beautiful person. And like, literally my eyes started watering when you were talking about, in particular, the woman that's wanting to find her person to start a family. That's so many women. That's someone listening in right now. That's like ugly crying in her car, cause that's the way that she feels. And there's so much pressure, especially as a woman, that age range, that 37 to 40, like that age. And like, all like, oh, I'll just like marry this person because like, I just want to have this family. And it's just like, gosh, it's so beautiful the way that you're going into so much depth about this. And I'm so excited for this book to come out in the world. I'm so excited to read it and just get my hands on it too. So where can people find it if they want to snag their copy?
So thank you for everything you just said, Keisha. It means the world to me, and you get it. You get why I did this, which means a lot to me. The book is called Love Life, How to Raise Your Standards, Find Your Person, and Live Happily No Matter What. I've been working on it for many years. It's the culmination of 17 years now of helping people in their love lives and their confidence and also their sense of worth. People can get it if they go to, firstly, you can get it anywhere you like. It will be everywhere, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, independent stores. But something I would urge everyone to do is go to lovelifebook.com because not only can you order it from your retailer of choice on that page, but you can also take your receipt number once you've ordered it and come back to that page and use it as a way to get a free ticket to an event that I am doing on May the 4th called Find Your Person, which is going to be a global virtual event that is exclusive access just for people who get a copy of Love Life, the book. And the book is going to be all of the ideas and the awareness and the fundamentals. And the event I'm going to do is then going to combine that with putting you on a path for the next year to being happy enough and to finding your person. And it's going to be a tremendous event. It's a live event. I'm not doing it again. So go to lovelifebook.com, grab yourself a copy, and then put in your receipt number and get your free ticket to that event because it's going to be special. And I just hope, you know, I everyone out there, when you get a copy of the book, please, you know, DM me on Instagram or send me an email and let me know what you think, because I think this in many ways is the most important project of my life so far. And
you can feel it, Matthew. Like people can feel it through this episode or if they're watching. And it's like, you can feel how much this matters to you. So I also just want to thank you, because what you're showing through your example of putting work like this out into the world, going through what you've gone through in your life, which you didn't even touch on your story as much as we could go into that. And they can read more about that in the book, but it's like, you chose to still then use this as an outlet to serve other people in a massive way. And I think you're a source of inspiration for people that are going through hard times right now, that their story will not only empower them, but also could also be, you know, this message for other people that need to hear their story too. So I appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time today. I'm so excited about your book. Also, everybody just needs to connect with you on your YouTube channel, on Instagram. I'll link all this stuff. But honestly, thank you so much. You're truly so genuine. You can feel it. And it's just a beauty that we got to spend some time together. And for everyone that listened in, thank you so much for your time.
I loved it, Keisha. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you love this episode, it would mean so much to me if you shared it with a girlfriend. Like, send it to her right now or post it on social media and tag me so I can personally thank you for helping me get the message out. I am so freaking grateful to be on this journey with you, girl. So until next time, I'll talk to you soon.